Well now, let's focus our minds upon God's word and the passage that was read for us earlier there. So the Olympics, the on-off Olympics, it appears they're on, yet we can't be sure. Life has a certain uncertainty about it, hasn't it, in these days? Plans are made and then plans have to be shelved, and God is surely speaking to us through these things. So as I think about the Olympic Games, I think back to the days when I was, shall we say, young, free and single. And my big hobby in life was visiting other countries. And I had a longing to go to Greece because of the background, especially in the New Testament. But it was a great joy for me in the ministry to visit Greece and to go to the site of the very first Olympics. The Olympic ideal is a basically simple idea, but it's quite an ingenious idea. The problem the Greeks had in facing their enemies was that they were very divided into different tribes, and they would fall out with each other and fight with each other, and that made it easier for other nations like the Persians to defeat them. But someone came up with the idea, instead of fighting, why don't we compete at some sport against each other? So it was all planned, and at Mount Olympus, the running track was carved out. I have to say that as I looked at the 100-meter track, there's a chap that I had been friendly with who was on the tour, and we lined up and ran against each other down the Olympic 100-meter track. What an experience. Not say who won the race, but... the interesting thing in all of this is the way that Paul and the writer also to the Hebrews, we're not sure if that was Paul, but it's the way that they use figures of speech or metaphors drawn from the world of athletics that I find very, very interesting. So what is the Lord saying to us today? Well, at the very core of the reading that we had earlier is this: let us run with endurance or perseverance the race marked out for us. And you will see there that the Christian life is described by a very active, very vigorous word picture or metaphor. And it's running a race. I wonder, do you often reflect on that you are in a race? A race for glory. That around us, as it were, in the great stands and those great stadiums, there are the believers, the saints of the past, and it's as though they are the spectators in these great stadiums, and they are encouraging us to keep going on in the Christian life. That's what I want to try and do today, to encourage you and challenge you as we think about the Christian life as a race. So turn with me to Hebrews then, again, and to chapters, the last part of chapter 11, and first part of chapter 12. Now, notice before we get into it that here we have, when we think of the Christian life as a race, we have God's sovereignty. He has prepared the track that we will run on. So there's God's sovereignty. There's also, of course, the parallel, our responsibility. Let us run. So just think about that by way of introduction. On the one side, God's sovereignty. The race is marked out for us. That's the thing about running. Wonder if anyone here took a part in any of the marathons in Belfast. That was in the days before they ran on the Sabbath day. But maybe you had a go at that. And of course, the path that you were running was all carefully marked out. Some people went off the track, had to get back on again. But if they'd kept their eyes open, the race was clearly marked out. That this reminds us that God has a plan. He has a race for us to run. And so that means that for believers, the future is not ultimately uncertain. Some people talk that way as though the future was uncertain. But it's not. To change the picture, God is like the master weaver who is weaving to a pattern. And one day his work will be complete and we will see what he enabled us to make of our lives for him. And it's pictured, I'm sure you've heard before, the illustration of the great tapestry way back many, many centuries ago, which became famous, and people would come from all over and all arts and parts to view this wonderful creation, which wasn't quite finished. But one person records how he went, and the way of displaying this great tapestry was in a specially built building where you went in at the bottom and you looked up to see the wonderful tapestry. And this person came and they were so eager to see it, and they went in the door and they looked up and it seemed just to be a mass of tangled threads. "Ah," said the man in charge, "come with me up these steps to a balcony." And they went up, and then he peered over the balcony, and there was the tapestry. We see things from down below in this world, but one day we will see things as they really are, and we will look down from above, and we will say, "How wonderful! How wonderful God was in my life. My life really did make sense. He put it all together, the master weaver's hand." And of course, the dark threads, the difficult things, they're all part of the plan. So you see, the race is marked out. Your race will not be the same race as my race. But there are things that God has for me to do and for you to do. God has a plan, the master weaver. Or as we'll see shortly, the one who coaches the athlete. Now, It's interesting when he talks about the race marked out for us. He uses that very same Greek expression of Jesus. The race was marked out for him as well. Jesus looked to the future, who for the joy marked out for him endured the cross. It was all planned. And then, of course, better keep going here, we're not out of introduction yet. On the other side, there is human or man's responsibility. God has the path mapped out, so let us run. Let us run. When you go to a race, you often find that the spectators are more in number than the participants. And that makes me remember, of course, as I'm sure you know, it was a man from Dervok who won the Olympic marathon. And no British runner since then has ever won that race. Kennedy MacArthur. He ran the race and he won the marathon race. There's actually some footage I've seen, and it was when he came into the stadium and all the people were cheering. Someone ran out of the crowd and put a great big heavy flower arrangement on his head, and he staggered under it, but he kept going. Let us run the race. So the MacArthur Marathon was very much a thing when I was living in Dervok, when I was pastoring in Dervok. The MacArthur Marathon was one of the things. Thankfully, they had an option for those who weren't trained to run the whole of the marathon. It was called a fun run, and I ran the fun run. And I just wasn't very fit at the time, so it wasn't really fun. But I completed my little bit as well. I also ran in the Belfast Marathon as part of a team. We were raising money for the Boys' Brigade in Tamlin O'Crilly. And I was given first choice, and I saw this section, 3-point-something miles, and I thought, that's not too far. What I realized then when I got out on the run was that actually it was up the Shankill Road and then up the Falls Road and up Anderson's Down and right uphill all the way. And I was tempted to stop running. But I noticed a chap running in front of me, and he ran at a very steady pace. Not running too fast, not running too slow, just at a lovely pace. And I fixed my eyes on him. And before I knew it, all the hills had been conquered. And as I watched him disappear off into the distance, I handed over the baton to the next runner in the relay. Let us run the race. But the thing, of course, about the marathon, the Belfast Marathon or the Dervok Marathon, was that they were more spectators than participants. So I have to ask the question, are you one of the ones on the sidelines, not really committed to running that race? Not really committed. And the writer says to us, let us run. Let us run the race mapped out for us, so that one day we'll be able to echo the words of Paul at the end of his journey when he said, I've run a good race. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. That's what God is saying to us today. Keep going. Keep going. Sometimes it's difficult. We don't underestimate those things. But we must keep running. We must keep running. And one day, how wonderful to be able to say, I've run a good race. I finished the course. I've kept the faith. So, bearing that in mind, let's look more closely at our passage here. And I've broken it up into different headings, different teaching under each heading. And so the first thing we see in this, as we take it logically through, is the ever-present danger in running the race. The ever-present danger. And what is that? So that we will not grow weary and lose heart. So that we will not grow weary and lose heart. That's the danger. When the going really gets tough, we could lose heart and drop out of the race. Can't remember just which Olympic marathon it was. I didn't see it, but I saw the report afterwards. Liz McColgan has a connection with Northern Ireland. Married her coach is a fellow from Northern Ireland, as far as I know. And she was tipped to win the ladies' marathon. And she really believed she was well prepared. But what happened? She didn't even make it halfway, as I remember. She lost heart. And she dropped out. And the writer says, yes, you will be weary, but don't lose heart. Keep going. We have many examples, don't we, to encourage us in that line. I think, for instance, of the leaders of the children of Israel when they had been released from that terrible bondage in Egypt. And yet, when they were in the desert, the question was, how would they be fed? Where would they get water? And they became terribly discouraged. And Moses preached to them and he encouraged them, but it says they didn't hear what he was saying because of their discouragement. And you know, sometimes people come to church and they can't hear what the minister's saying because they're so discouraged. Things are really going tough. The writer here wants to encourage us. He says, we're in a race. We've got to expect this. Think of Elijah. He ran away from his responsibility before God. He just ran away. And when God spoke to him, he said, I've had enough. I can't take any more of life. I can't take any more. And I have done my best, Lord, for you. I have witnessed for you. But what has happened? They won't listen. And so he was downcast. Danger of giving up completely. And the Lord said, the Lord was so gracious with him, wasn't he? He first of all said, Elijah, you need a rest. Just rest. And the Lord provided food. Just those things that to get him through, to get him over that hump. And he came back into the ministry. And you remember that run that he made to Jezreel? He was able to run in front of the king's chariot. So is God able to help us? Is God able to strengthen us? That we will keep going in this marathon that is the Christian life. Let's move on. Secondly, each one of these begins with an E. the everyday preparation for running the race. Now, if you go to see a race, or whether it's 5,000 metres or 10,000 or whatever, you'll see that the athletes, when they congregate at the beginning of the race, have different layers of clothing on. That's to keep their muscles from seizing when they start running. And they lay aside, don't they, two or three layers, and they lay all, everything aside except the very minimum. And the writer says that's what we must do spiritually. What does he mean? What are we to lay aside? Well, he says everything that hinders. That's the first thing. Everything that hinders. And he's speaking there of things that in and of themselves are not sinful, but they can get to such a stage that they're beginning to impede us. We've got to be careful that we keep all things in perspective and we keep our priorities right. Since I retired officially, so many things I've been looking forward to doing, things I'd laid aside, books I want to read and so on. And it's great. I really worried about retirement, but so far so good. The Lord is good. And yet I can see there are things that I could get really interested in and really into that could shift the balance, just that little bit, tilt the balance. Just be careful, the writer says. Lay aside everything that would hinder. And then he goes further, he says, everything that would trip you up. Now, when you watch the runners in the 100 metres, they don't have big, long clothes on reaching down to the ground, do they? They wouldn't get far in their race if they tried to run burdened down with all the clothes and things that they have arrived at the race with. They've got to lay all that aside. The stuff that would weigh you down. And the stuff that would entangle. That's the second thing. The sin that so easily entangles. You ever had that experience where you've put on a dressing gown or something that stretches down and you step on it and down you come? Dangerous. It so easily entangles, and sin is like that. It's so easy to get entangled and tripped up, and we fall on our faces because we weren't taking care. We weren't watching out for the sin that so easily entangles. And the sin that you battle with is not the same sin that I battle with. But Satan will see that we have a battle in our hands. And we must get our priorities right. Everyday preparation. So don't start the day or go into the day without the preparation. Without having been with the Lord. Listening to his voice. Speaking to him. Committing the day's racing to him, if we want to put it that way. So there is the everyday preparation. Thirdly, the exacting discipline or training for running the race. Paul, writing to the Corinthians in his first letter, chapter 9, talks about those who have a career in athletics. He says they go into strict training. And you know it's true, you can't go out and run a marathon, or even a half marathon, or even a fun run, without preparing, without training. And those professional athletes, the Mo Farahs of this world, they're prepared to accept a very strict regime of training. He will deny himself many things. He will not eat that food that is not the right food for him. It has to be the right food. It has to be the right amount of sleep. It has to be the daily training, going through all those exercises, building up his muscles so that when he comes to that race that he must run, he is at the peak of his condition. He will train in all weathers. Notice what we read there in Hebrews 12 about this matter. The writer says, you have endured discipline, training. You received that from your parents. When you were out of order, you were punished. But that's a good thing because it gets you back where you should be. Have you forgotten this word which is given to encourage you, he says. So we should be encouraged if we have had parents who disciplined us. And so it is with regard to the running of the Christian race. There is a training, there is a discipline which we keep up. One of the things I am so thankful for is that I can still walk a good little distance each day. I know that if I didn't do that, that my whole approach to coping with illness would change. But even though it's exacting, even though it's tough, let's keep going. Okay, well then we move on to the next heading, which is about the encouragement for running the race. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. That's an interesting, a very interesting expression there. We wouldn't use that. We would say a crowd. But the writer says it's a cloud. There's so many. It's just like one vast cloud filling the whole universe. We are surrounded, he says, by a great cloud. And you know how when it's a very, very cloudy day, how the cloud can nearly blot out the sun. The cloud is so dense. And it's as though the writer is saying there are so many witnesses. And again, haven't we this picture? The picture is of all the people who are in the stands to cheer on the athletes. I saw that when I was in Olympia. The tears going up for the spectators. And all the focus was on that track, running the race. And how it must have felt for the runners when they came around that bend and they were in the lead. And the crowd began to cheer and cheer their hero home. What encouragement. And the writer says, it's as though here are all these people and they've made it all the way home. And now they're in the stands and they're encouraging. They're calling out. They're saying to us, we kept going. You can do it too. Keep going. Keep going. And then the great cheer when they breast the finishing line. In Paul's day, it was a little post. First past the post. The encouragement for running the race. Think of all that those host of witnesses, and we get examples there, we read it earlier, all that they came through. Well, let's move on then, number five, the effort. The effort in running the race. Let us run with what? Endurance. Endurance. Or perseverance. And what is that? Well, I'm sure you know. It is that quality. In the long distance runner, for example, and their legs are wobbling, their lungs feel like they're bursting, there's a stitch in the side, and yet they grit their teeth and they go on and on and on. That's endurance. Keeping on till the end. There's a little Hebrew expression I used to give to the lads at the college, describing Gideon. Radfim ad gofim. Exhausted and yet pursuing. Remember Gideon? They had won that initial battle. The enemies were on the run, and Gideon was running after them, organizing all the way. Ayafim merodfim. He was exhausted and yet pursuing. And you know, friends, today in Kalibaki, you know too what I know, that there are times when our track is downhill, and there are days like these, the sun shines, and your heart is singing as you walk through the wonderful trees and see the wild flowers. And you feel, this Christian life is wonderful. I could keep going on here forever. But there will be days when it's uphill. There will be days when the wind and the rain and the sleet will be battering you in the face. And you will feel exhausted. And you will be asking, will I get through this? Will I be able to cope with this? Because you're exhausted. And you're wondering, will I get through? Yes, you will, is the answer. Yes. But the effort, the endurance, we've just got to keep going. That's what the message of the Lord is. Don't give up. It'll be all worth it in the end. And then the writer says, you remember, to those believers, those Israelite believers, remember, it could always be worse. You haven't shed your blood yet, he said. It might come to that. Our forefathers in the hills of the southwest of Scotland knew what it was to give their blood for Christ, his crown and his covenant. So may the Lord enable us the effort. Well, we're coming on near the end. Ah, yes. Number 6, I think it is, the essential activity in running the race. How wonderful this is. Let us fix our eyes upon Jesus, the author and the perfecter or the finisher of our faith. Oh, let us fix our eyes on Jesus. Remember I said when I was running in that relay in Belfast, as part of that marathon, I fixed my eyes on that runner in front. And somehow that encouraged me to keep going. But when we fix our eyes upon Jesus, when we meet with him day by day, how wonderful it is. And yet how essential. Because if we fix our eyes on the things of this world, if we fix our eyes upon the things that are happening in our society, which is breaking down and crumbling, before our very eyes, if we fix our eyes on that, we will lose heart. But we fix our eyes upon Jesus. Fix your eyes on him. We can't look around. We can't look back. We can't look down. We can't look at the crowd. No, fix your eyes on Jesus. He's the goal. One day, being with him. One day, seeing him, talking with him. Is it any wonder Paul says, forgetting all that is behind, I go all out. He's using the picture of the runner. I go all out to win the prize. I go all out to cross the goal, the finishing line. So don't fix your eyes on the problems. Don't fix your eyes on the discouragements. Lift up your eyes and see Jesus. And remember, as the writer says earlier in this letter, remember that we see Jesus and he is crowned with glory and with honor. Perhaps you know the little poem which says, turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in his wonderful face, and the things of earth will go strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. How good he is to us. He's the author and the finisher of our faith. He brought us into this race that we're running. He's the author. And having begun a good work, he will carry it on to perfection on the great day. He will see us through. He began that work. He will complete that work. And so finally, we reach the seventh heading, which is the example, following on from number six, the example to consider. Who for the joy set before him endured the cross. We're to focus on what he endured. Opposition from sinful men. There are people we will meet who will try to make it hard for us, to tie us up in knots, to get us to deny our faith. Remember about Jesus, it says he came to his own and his own would not receive him. He was scorned and rejected and despised. He endured this bitter opposition. And then he endured the cross. He endured the cross, scorning its shame. He went all the way to Calvary. He endured not just the physical agony, but the spiritual suffering, the shame. Cursed is everyone who hangs on a tree, and they wanted him to be cursed by God. And yet Jesus reached out, as it were, that bitter cup of the wrath of God, and he drank it down to its bitter dregs as he took our place on that cruel cross. But then the writer says, having done that, he sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. He sat down at the right hand of the throne. And you know what that means? It means that he reigns by the right hand of the Father. He is absolutely in control. This is his world. This is his universe. Let's make no mistake. He's in charge. Let us fix our eyes upon him. He came through his race. What a race he had. Now he's absolutely in control. He came through to the joy. who for the joy, the heart of Christ rejoices throughout the countless ages of eternity. There is joy, joy in the Christian life, joy in running the race, joy in finishing the course. Look up then. Look up today. Look to Jesus, who has triumphed, who gives us joy. Amen.